Welcome back to the Shanti Ma Podcast. This is episode 21. Spirituality, bypassing, and psychosis. What's the difference between helpful versus harmful? Compassion versus accepting abuse and ill treatment. And let's forget the facts and give it up to our charismatic leader. What is woo-woo and out-of-touch spiritual concepts versus grounded and rooted curiosity and wonder for the magic of life? Your life isn't perfect. Then there must be something wrong with you. Come, my child. There's no need to think. Let me fix you for you. Join us today for this very interesting conversation as we tread territory into slippery subject matter. We do our best to work out some of our own queries about how to balance a spiritual life while still keeping a solid grasp on reality. And before I get into today's episode, I just want to let you know that I was having a little difficulty with technology and my mic today. It's clear but sounds a little far away. But it was also just one of those days, one of those Murphy's Law kind of days. So we're going with it anyways. Today's guest is a mental health advocate, therapist in training, former comedian, as well as TEDx speaker. She has split the last decade between writing, performing, completing 2 master's degrees, and managing communications for clean technology solutions, including Stocked App, which she co-founded and is CEO of. She is also a good friend of mine. So without further ado, please give it up for my dear friend, Clay Roth. Welcome to my podcast, Clay.
Thank you, Shanti. So good to be here.
Finally.
Finally, here we are.
Yes, this has been a very interesting start to the day. I
definitely
want you all to know that it started with a bent house key that could not lock my door, and then I stepped in dog poo. Mm-hmm. So this will be interesting. So I was wanting to get you on the podcast, Clay, because you're my super smart friend. For one, and you have a well-rounded background in formal education, as well as you've got your spiritual beliefs, which we obviously have, you know, discussed and talked about. So mm-hmm. You're also a spiritual person, but it's grounded, mm-hmm. which is such an important thing to be grounded.
That sigh of relief says everything, doesn't it? Like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
No kidding. So let's start off by having you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background and what you do.
Yeah, sounds good. So right now I am a therapist in training. So in a few months from now, I will hopefully be a registered clinical counselor, which I'm delighted about and very excited about. So I'm practicing right now in my practicum. And then before that, I've got, you know, maybe 10 years of kind of being a mental health advocate. And that came in the form of me doing a lot of performing and acting and talking and writing. And writing and talking have been a big part of my life. Working communications for a long time, I still do. Like you said, like I have 4 degrees. I just can't stop going to school. And it's funny that, like, you know, I did one of my masters at the University of London in the UK, and my dissertation was on kind of what we're talking about today a bit. So I'm super excited to get into it. Come closer.
Yeah, okay. A little bit. There we go.
And you know, I studied like kind of post-colonial thought and global policy, so kind of these really big ideas about people, history, and oppression in a big way. And then the second master's being in counseling psychology, which is kind of talking, you know, thinking a lot about, you know, how these things have played out with on the individual level, or I don't think there actually is an individual level, but, you know, in people's minds. And I am like a wellness person, and I'm a cautiously spiritual person. So that's been a huge chunk of my life. And I guess the other part too, and I don't mind saying it, is like the crossover here for me and kind of the some of the stuff we're going to get into today is like I've lost my mind before. I have gone completely off my rocker with a psychotic break that lasted about a year. And that was a decade ago now. But, you know, I'm very open about that. I've got my TEDx talk about that that you can go check out. I'm sure that will be in the podcast notes. And that's connected in a way, because I think when I sort of hear and see some very disconnected, ungrounded, over-the-top woo-woo spiritual babble, you know, I don't think it's meant to hurt people who are currently battling psychosis, but I know that it does. Mm-hmm. Right? Because there's a lot of crossover between kind of these very delusional beliefs and the things that people fall into when they're psychotic, and they're very hard to get out of. Very, very hard. Mm. Yeah. So that's the Coles Notes of me right now.
Yeah. Well, and this is part of what I wanted to discuss and why I wanted to have you on the podcast, for us to have this conversation, because I have noticed that, you know, spirituality, new age spirituality, and the reason why I say new age spirituality it's become kind of like a fad or like a badge of honor that I've been noticing people wearing. But it's, I'm seeing, you know, a lot of ideas that mean well, but they're not really grounded in anything. And so I also see some stuff that makes me feel a little, you know, concerned about, and this is what we're going to talk about today, what is spiritual and what is bypassing and what is actual psychosis? And so I guess let's go from there. What's the difference between spirituality, bypassing, and psychosis?
Right. I guess when we talked about spiritual bypassing, I mean, that word bypassing to me means like what are you holding on to that's going to prevent you from having to feel uncomfortable human feelings, right? So if the belief that you're currently espousing means that you don't have to suffer in the same way that other humans do, you don't have to think about loss or poverty or the uncertainties of life. You know, somebody dies and you say, you know, it's meant to be, they're in a better place, and actually the way that they died was something quite horrific, unjust, etc. You know, that's bypassing all of the uncomfortable feelings that one would reasonably feel in such a circumstance. So making a ginormous leap in order to really feel the feelings, feel the feelings of uncertainty and terror that so many of us, you know, reasonably do feel in a world that feels deeply uncertain right now.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to get you a little closer to the mic.
Yep, okay. I'm going to bring this closer and my chair closer.
Get up in this mic's table.
Business. All right, how's this?
That's better.
Okay, cool.
Sorry if that's a little... Speaking of uncomfortable.
Oh, there we go. Okay, okay.
Okay, yeah, I mean, and that's a really good, I think, explanation of bypassing, because I have heard people mention that before where... you know, okay, for an example, someone who's been through something like incredibly traumatic in their life, and then someone comes along and is like, yeah, but everything happens for a reason, and it was meant to happen to you. It's like, well, I mean, okay, for myself in my own life, that concept has helped me in certain times to accept things, that life is complicated and painful, and we don't really know why the things that happen to us do happen. And I think that for my own self, having some spiritual beliefs around this stuff that's happened to me has helped me to grapple with it and accept it. And I've been able to do that mostly in a very healthy, I feel, way. But I know that you have to be there. Actually, I'll give a good example. I remember years ago, I had called in one of my favorite authors. Do you know who Wayne Dyer is?
Yeah,
Yeah. So, I mean, one of his books like completely changed my life. Mm-hmm. And at the time I had called in and, you know, I got to talk to him and I asked him this really big question. I was, you know, bringing up something that had happened to me in my past and I was trying to, you know, figure out how to cope with it. And, you know, mm-hmm. he said about forgiving this person and I was like, ugh. Forgive this person because mm-hmm. I wasn't at that place at that time ready to. So for me, it almost kind of felt dismissive. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Wayne Dyer. I'm a huge fan of his work and everything that he, you know, mm-hmm. brought here through mm-hmm. his teachings. Mm-hmm. But at the time that for me, like I wasn't in a place where I could really like accept that. Now I'm like, okay, actually, I do understand that in order for me to move on from certain wrongs that happened in my life, mm-hmm. I don't have to say to this person, I forgive you, but in my heart, I need to so I can move on from that. Mm-hmm. But I think that this sort of premature tossing of just go with the flow and everything just happens and let's just, you know, like mm-hmm. have endless compassion for people who are being really abusive to you mm-hmm. can start to get into this territory of actually quite harmful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to say, I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is too soon to segue into that, but you did it already. I was talking about, okay, so is the spiritual community, the wellness community ready to address abuse? Mm. Right. What's the languaging around abuse? What's the conventional wisdom and advice that's given about abuse, right? And we talked about that earlier that, you know, it seems like we're being given a lot of really false choices and false dichotomies. You either lay down and take it and you accept and you forgive and you, you know, you offer the other cheek or you, you know, stand for people's abuse because, you know, they're hurt too. Or you, I don't know, get up, walk away, and set their butt on fire. That's such a false choice, right? And I feel like there's maybe not enough yet critical thought maybe in the, like, the spiritual community about what is abuse? Can we identify it? Can we talk about it? And can we like protect ourselves in really reasonable ways from it, mm. right?
Yeah, because there's a lot of abuse that has happened in the name of, you know, spirituality. I mean, just human beings are so complex. There's abuse of every kind in every mm-hmm. walks of life. It doesn't matter where you come from. So just because something is spiritual or someone is in the guise of guru, teacher, spiritual, doesn't mean that they're not going to abuse their power. So you do still have to be quite careful. Mm-hmm. So let's talk then. We're just going to dive right in because this is why we're here. Let's talk about the difference between compassion versus accepting abuse. Mm. And then I want to talk about the charismatic leader and abusive relationships.
Because like we said, like when we're talking about kind of you know, how do people get wrapped up in some pretty bizarre beliefs, some beliefs that are going to require some kind of imaginative acrobatics in order to maintain. And I do think that comes down to the charismatic leader, right? And charismatic leaders and abusers have so much in common, so much in common. And I think like that can come down to, you know, the bypassing of facts of, you know, we don't want to ground things in reality, do we? Because then people might start questioning my authority. Wait, can we pause for a second?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
One moment. Has this unpaused it? Yes, it has.
Okay, great. There we go. Excellent. So I think, and the reason why I said earlier, like, has the spiritual, I mean, like, there's not just one monolithic spiritual community, obviously, but have we learned to talk about abuse is because I think, you know, a lot of kind of new agey spiritual beliefs, like, where are they kind of getting the roots from? A lot of it, you know, if you trace it down, can be kind of, you know, just plain old boring fundamental Christianity stuff that's informing how we go about living our lives or making decisions. And that can be used really to the benefit of abusers, right? Because if we're meant to be endlessly forgiving, if we're meant to always turn the other cheek and meant to, you know, always kind of like lay down our own needs for somebody else to trample all over them over and over again, that can really work against us, especially when somebody's on the quest to be a, quote, better person, or to be giving, or to improve themselves. That can be really motivating to constantly prove that they're willing to kind of put up with, essentially, abuse, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. When you're on the healing path, you're vulnerable. And that's something that I have noticed is... people who are these, you know, self-help sort of gurus or healers, and they're charging crazy amounts of money to heal people. And it's not that I don't feel that there's a place for healers. I mean, you and I both know that, you know, truly, we both know that. You know, and for those of you listening, like, we both have backgrounds in Reiki, like, we know this stuff, but there's also a certain amount of, like, you want people to feel empowered to heal themselves or to have the tools for themselves, not, come here, my broken child. Let me take you under my wing and heal you. $300, please.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm kind of being a smartass about it. But, like, this is a problem I personally do have with what's going on in this sort of community and world. Like, Clay, hold on a moment. I'm sensing that you have hemorrhoids. Let me give you this crystal. Insert it 2 times a day and you will be healed. And I will accept $500, please.
You know, that actually does sound like a good time. But no, but really, and I can't help but see connections to just neoliberalism, right? Improve yourself, improve yourself, improve yourself. Manifest the perfect life for yourself. Achieve the dream for yourself. And if you're not, there's something wrong with you. But you can improve it. Always improve it, right? Shell out money here. Support this person over here. Listen to this advice. And you as a person will accomplish ultimate glory and, you know, surpass all of the peasants and become a shining chakra, glowing, whatever, superhuman. Like that seeped in kind of this new liberalist idea that one can surpass others, essentially, for like kind of this ultimate glory. And that if other people aren't doing that, man, that's on them, you know. You get cancer, your fault. You get sick, your fault. You had bad thoughts. You weren't like glorious enough in your devotion to X, Y, and Z. Stuff like that, right? And the amount of pressure that puts on people to go on this kind of like frantic, desperate journey. And like, I think what you said it just resonates so much. You know, people on this journey to heal, to better themselves are vulnerable, because what does that look like? What does getting better as a person look like? And if somebody comes up to you and says, well, this is what's wrong with you, and this is how you can make it better, like, my gosh, you're going to be so vulnerable to believe that and accept that.
And everyone also has a very different opinion. Like, even with my own health, for an example, like, you know, with having chronic pain, I'm, you know, I have been really trying to heal. And I feel like I'm doing so much, like so much of my days often are completely reliant upon just managing my pain. I'm going to all these appointments. I'm trying to do everything I can. And then there's this part of me that's like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not healing? Why is my body betraying? It must be my mind. I must be like not thinking the right things. And then you get so many different medical personal just opinions about what you're supposed to be doing, and when you're not getting the results that you want, it can be really frustrating. And then you know, I'm also grapple with, you know, I have doctors that tell me this is a permanent condition, and I'm like, I don't want to accept that it's a permanent condition, not because I have an issue with accepting reality, but I do also at the same time believe the mind is powerful, and that if you hold on to hope that healing is possible, it might take you a while, but you'll get there. Or at least maybe you don't, you know, heal completely, but you can heal at least 20%, 30%, or whatever that may be. But it can be really kind of, I want to say discombobulating when you're like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not healing? And so this is where we kind of get into some of these, like, you know, ideas around toxic healers that you were kind of mentioning.
Yeah.
You want to elaborate a little bit
about and that? Also just to point out something that you said, like, okay, so you were in a car accident. In a grounded world, not using magical thinking, you were injured. The natural consequence of being injured is being injured, right? Mm-hmm. And the magical thinking that goes into people who are spewing out advice for you to how to be not injured is ridiculous. We live in a world where if you get in a car accident, you get hurt, you're going to feel pain and have long-lasting injuries, and the kind of bypassing that happens there of, oh no, but you don't have to live this miserable life of suffering that the rest of us do. You'll just use your mind and get out of it. Mm. Of course not. Of course not.
I'm not putting enough magic crystals in my butt.
Exactly. If you would only put a couple more crystals in your butt, I'm telling you, Shanti, you wouldn't have to experience the consequences of a car crash. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is where, like, I have, you know, in my own life, mm-hmm. like, there was a while there where I almost felt like spiritually I was so shut down. Like, mm-hmm. I shut everything down because I was just like, you know, I do believe that as humans, we need to believe in something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, we need meaning. Mm-hmm. We need some kind of purpose. And so I think that's where mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff comes from. And maybe that's why over the last year and a half, we've seen so many conspiracy theories and things like that come up.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, you know, before you start, you know, labeling things with spiritual causes and reasons, which some people argue there's always a spiritual cause. And I'm not saying that there isn't, but sometimes that's not the best place to start. Sometimes the best place to start is talking in therapy. Because if you have wound yourself into such a, you know, place that you're having a hard time coming out of because you've lost yourself in, you know, some ideology or some, you know, psychosis or delusion, then at that point, what you need is something to ground you, something that's, you know, grounding you here. Because, I mean, I'll bring this up, like I was saying earlier about my spiritual teacher. This go with the flow, that's not spiritual.
Yeah.
It isn't. Yeah. You need something that's grounded and rooted so that you can be in this world and of this world and still live in this world and not just go around, you know, trivializing and dismissing human suffering because you are living in a spiritual paradigm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So it's like, how do we balance that? What's your thought on how to balance both worlds?
Right, exactly. And that's the question too. Like, are there two worlds? You know, do we have to choose? Because I think a lot of what we highlighted is kind of like magical thinking in a lot of ways, trying to escape the realities of this like very harsh and difficult world that we are living in, that we can be grounded in. And yeah, like, do we have to sacrifice anything to be grounded? I guess I'll put that back to you, actually, because I mean, I think, you know, our spiritualities between the two of us are quite different. Like, is there a conflict there for you?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, I feel like what has been the most helpful for me is, it's almost like when you're in meditation and you're breathing in and breathing out and you feel this really deep sense of peace. That's like such a beautiful experience to have. And I prefer living in that peaceful place. I prefer to believe that when I leave this body behind, that I don't just go into nothingness. And also, I've had enough experiences with things that I can't necessarily describe or you know, define by scientific rules, that I'm like, and you know, in the presence of other people, I'm like, there is more to life than just what meets, you know, this flesh and bones. But at the same time, do I feel like it would be helpful or healthy for me to think about that every day, like all day long? Like, I still have to experience this life in this world with my relationships. And, you know, I still have my responsibilities here, which would be a really good kind of place to bounce it back to you and talk about, what did you call it? Allergy to accountability. And yeah, and just like taking responsibility, I think, for yourself and your life, because I think it's so much easier sometimes to avoid by creating a story,
right,
rather than really looking at the truth of yourself and your life and something that really does need to shift.
Yeah, exactly. And that kind of reminds me too of like, how do we define a disorder, right? We don't define a disorder based on, well, hopefully not, based on like those people look different than me, therefore they're disordered. I mean, that, not that that doesn't happen, it does. But technically what a disorder is does this cause acute discomfort and an inability to live a fulfilling life? So I'm thinking of like wellness and spirituality in themselves, awesome concepts, like wellness, going to bed at a regular time, awesome, good for you. That is fantastic. Having a spiritual practice that makes you feel good and become a more in tune, compassionate person. Fantastic. When does that go too far? It goes too far when it starts interrupting your life. Like, ironically, being very, very unhealthy. You can't maintain relationships. You can't function normally. You can't pay the bills. You you can't be understood anymore by the people who love you. You know, you can't get through the day without feeling intensely paranoid. Okay, now we've gone into disorder land, where this is actually not helping you as much as it's hurting you, or it might be hurting other people as well, right? Kind of making that distinction between, is this helping or is this hurting? And of course, people who are maybe in full-blown kind of paranoia, borderline psychosis with their spiritual beliefs would believe that it's, of course, helping them. Of course it is. But that's a tricky one.
And like, why do you think so many people are kind of going down this path right now? And does special and different apply?
Right. So to give some context, we had this conversation, Shanti and I, about, well, kind of like entitled narcissism, right? That's kind of where it came from, with that conversation.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. Where does that come from? You know, that ego defense of, I am so special than other people, which means that rules don't apply to me. And I will spend my life proving that I am special and different, special and different, which ultimately is so lonely. So deeply lonely and ungrounded, right? Too, you have to kind of live in a pretend world in order to maintain that illusion that one is special and different all the time. Like, quite exhausting. Yeah. Sorry, what was the actual question before I gave the background to that?
I think I was just mentioning like special and different and how that may apply to the spiritual community, because I think I've just, that's something that I've observed. And like, I think this is where I want to go with this, is the idea that, first of all, you have to look a certain way to be spiritual. You have to be, you know, like I said, putting crystals in your butt and smudging the wind.
Right.
I'm trying to be funny about this, but no, it really does. It is something that I've just noticed that. And I think where I have the issue with this is the people who are grounded in critical thinking and some practical wisdom might be deterred from certain, you know, like even just something as simple as sitting and like learning like meditative breathing, you know, in and out. They're kind of turned off because what they're seeing is this like very extreme version of like what it means to be spiritual and what that looks like. And there is no look that you're supposed to have in order to be spiritual, but this is kind of what we're seeing a lot of, and just this very increasing sort of like, it's like people need to be known that I am spiritual.
So would you say like a performative aspect?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say that could be true.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? Because I think maybe that would fall into the whole concept of being special and different. Mm-hmm. And again, I mean, just because you're, you know, wearing sacred geometry and burning incense doesn't mean that you're somebody who is like enlightened and has everything all figured out. Mm-hmm. And then is this like, you know, as we're talking about this, it's a very interesting conversation to tread upon. There's a lot of slippery aspects of like really where to go with it even.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And kind of what comes back to me too is, you know, I think it is hard still for us to wrap our minds around the slippery idea that somebody could chant daily and do many downward dogs and be a kind of shitty individual. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like how can you be doing that much yoga and breathing and still
still be a shitty am I allowed to swear on this? Can I swear?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. And so what comes to mind is like, you know, what's behind the kind of like performative aspect to constantly signal.
Oh, signaling.
Yeah, exactly. Like I am holy and sacred and therefore what, untouched by human shittiness? Probably not.
That even comes back to the social justice warrior, the people who virtue signal, like where you have like the people who are like, I'm socially just. And then, you know what I mean? It's kind of like we can, that's a totally different conversation, but you know, it's the same thing. It's like, is it then the question of we're living in a culture of like virtue signaling and just signaling in general? Why? Like, you know, I have my notes here where, you know, why do you feel like we're living in a culture where people need to make a show of their identity and work, you know, hobbies? Sometimes even family people do that, like, look at my life. And like, where do you think that's coming from? Of course, you have all the answers.
The thanks, universe, Shanti. So yeah,
please,
yeah. Thank you, Shanti.
Please tell us all. School us. Please.
You know, actually, I got caught up in what you said there because that's actually where my mind went to. I thought of people in the social justice world that it comes out that they're abusers, right? Or it comes out that they have these messed up, violent pasts that they're trying to escape by taking on these holy social justice type personas that's so creepy and scary and because again in that realm too, and that's kind of more my world, is that virtue signaling being used to be like, you can't hold me accountable for the things I've done because I'm a good person with a capital G and a capital P, right? And so it kind of depends on what circles you're running. You know, this person does this many downward dogs a day, therefore good person, or this person goes to this many marches per year, good person. Mm-hmm. Right? So kind of, again, shedding accountability, shedding that ability to like look at one's actions and words and is it congruent? Is there integrity here? Is there care for others? But being like, no, I drink chai tea, so.
Well, and you know, that's the thing. Like, that's kind of comes back to like the toxic person, the toxic healer, the toxic abuser. You know, like just because you do, you know, volunteer work in Nepal doesn't mean that you're not abusive to your wife and children. Then people are like, oh no, no, he could never. But I mean, here's a thought. Here's just a interesting thought for a moment. How many times in your life have you been abusive to somebody else? Most of us have at some point or another. So, you know, like to some degree, you know, to some degree, there's, and that I think is like very difficult and uncomfortable for people to be like, ooh, but being and having a moments where maybe perhaps you have been, you know, abuse. Okay. What's abusive? That's a good conversation. But, you know, trivializing somebody, dismissing somebody, stonewalling somebody, giving someone the silent treatment, manipulation.
Yeah.
That's all forms of abuse. Yeah. And so if you've done any of those things that I've just named, which is just to name a few, you have been abusive at some point in your life. That doesn't necessarily make you an abuser, but you better see that stuff and check yourself and go, hey, I have the potential and capability mm-hmm. being a human and of, you know, expressing these certain things that could be very toxic to somebody else on the receiving end of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think sometimes people want to live in the bubble of like, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I think we want to know that we know what an abuser looks like. Okay, so I'm going to know an abuser from a mile away because they're going to smell a certain way. They're going to skulk around and their knuckles are going to drag on the ground and they're going to look fundamentally evil and they're going to be dead in the eyes and they're going to be really mean to everyone.
And they wear a white tank top with stains.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm gonna feel safe in the world because I know what an abuser looks like.
And they only live on the other side of town, Clay.
Exactly. And then I'm gonna know what good people look like, right? And it's simple. And it's a fairy tale. In fairy tales, there's good people and there's bad people. Mm. The end. And that's not the world we live in.
No, humans are so complex.
Yeah.
And this is where, again, it gets into that little slippery area yeah. where it's like a bar of soap you're trying to grab in the shower. Like, how do I grab you? Keep slipping out of my hands. I need you on a rope.
Right. And so we have people coming forward being like, I've been abused by this person. And people are like, oh, well, he donates a lot of money. My brain is breaking right now trying to understand that he could, you know, both donate money and beat a woman. Mm. Really, why?
Or the other way around, where it's like, oh, like she, like, I mean, I've known guys before that have been like abused by yeah, yeah. women. And so yeah. it's like, but people don't want to see that kind of stuff for mm-hmm. some reason.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, I mean, that is like also just a part of human nature too, like, and the reality of life. And that's again where, yeah, it gets a little bit tricky and slippery. So how do people balance taking, let's say, like a practical approach to maintaining a healthy well-being and, mm-hmm. you know, mental, that includes obviously mental health. Mm-hmm. And then taking this personal responsibility rather than yeah. let's like chalk it up to the fact that, you know, mm-hmm. there's some spiritual reason mm-hmm. behind it first. Not that there isn't or couldn't be.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not the first place that you go to.
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad that you said the word responsibility because I think that responsibility actually is so grounding and so healthy because responsibility brings us in relationship, right? It makes us a part of the whole. When we're thinking about our responsibility, not just to ourselves, but to others and our general context, that can be deeply grounding. And it's so unfortunate too that that allergy to responsibility or accountability is there to, you know, to protect frightened egos or whatever it might be, because, you know, sitting in responsibility and really thinking about yourself as a person that functions in your society, not just someone who's ascending towards nirvana in your own, you know, bubble of unicorns and rainbows and spiritual bypassing, you know, it can be so deeply grounding to think about oneself as being situated in this social fabric and where does my responsibility lie? And are my beliefs that I'm currently believing and espousing and spreading, are they responsible? Not to like shame people, but to bring them into relationship. And I think for me anyways, speaking for myself, I think that's been one of the most healthy things I could have possibly done. And I'm somebody who recovered from full-blown psychosis, mm. right?
Yeah, and I mean, like, I do believe that there are, like I said earlier, I do believe that there are so much beyond, you know, what we do experience mm. on, like, a physical level. But mm. I don't necessarily feel that... I don't know. I don't feel like it's been overly helpful to live in that place as like a constant. And I think my mind is just going to a certain scenario where I have like a friend and her partner literally cheated on her mm-hmm. at like, you know, a retreat of all places. It was like really horrible. And, he had, you know, said that he broke up with her the day before, because he had broke up with her, like broke the soul contract, like with her highest self,
right?
And that she wouldn't understand because she was too 3D and he was working on 5D.
Of course. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think of like stories like that and I'm like, okay, but your beliefs now are harming somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah.
So now we've crossed over into the territory of harm. And in that scenario, obviously, you know, he's harming someone else. And I think inadvertently too, he is harming himself, whether he acknowledges it or not.
Yeah.
But if your beliefs are either harming somebody else or harming yourself, maybe that's where this line is toxic and that crossover. Because like I said, I am definitely a spiritual person. I believe in all, like I believe in a higher power. I believe in spirits and the spirit world. But, you know, I don't think that it's overly helpful to every time, you know, something happens that I'm like, it must be because of some spiritual reason. I don't know. Have you heard like many stories like this in your, obviously in your training and your education and what you're doing? Is that something that you kind of hear?
Okay. So the what you said, that's such a perfect example, right? Because I think that does actually give us a really good maybe definition of when does it go into harmful, because it sounds like that person had a choice, right? He could do something that's deeply uncomfortable and deeply accountable, go to somebody to their face and break up with them. He didn't want to do that. No. So he made up a world where he magically kind of pretend broke up with that person.
But he believed he did. That's when you start getting into like the territory that's really like.
Yeah. And so what would he have sacrificed by not believing that? Well, it would mean that he would have to go directly to that person, to that person's face, hurt her, deal with her response, break up with her, you know, in a grounded, accountable, responsible way. So the fact that this kind of make-believe world and this plane in which this breakup supposedly happened, mostly just, you know, for him, bypasses that discomfort. And so what that comes down to too is a tolerance for discomfort.
Oh, so nail on the head.
Yeah,
I know. How often, so I recently had heard, and you know, someone had asked, you know, basically, how do you not feel rejection? hopefully in your next life, you are born of a creature that has not human consciousness. And there you go. Because, and sort of my response was, well, rejection is a part of life, or feeling rejection, perceived rejection. That's a part of life. And if you never put yourself out there for fear of rejection, I mean, I don't know. I'm recording this podcast right now with you. Some people are gonna, you know, like it. Other people are gonna, you know, maybe unsubscribe. I don't know. Who knows? Like, but the reality is that if you don't ever put yourself out there, then you're not really living. You're kind of just like trying to run from uncomfortable feelings. And if the human discomfort of rejection is not what comes your way, there will be some other form of human suffering and uncomfortable emotion.
Right. You don't get to say, no, thanks. I'll pass. Yeah. I know that this world is a buffet of suffering, but no, thank you.
Yeah, and you know, and that's where we get into like a spiritual concept that I do believe, where they say like human life is full of suffering. In fact, if you go back into any of like the, you know, like some of the greatest teachings, like it is about human life is suffering. It's not to avoid suffering. It's to accept it, learn tools and ways to navigate it, and like celebrate when life is really good. But know that there's always going to be storms that come. But I like to think of it as, you know, if you're out at sea and the waves are pummeling you and you're in a little dinghy, you're going to be so screwed if you don't have paddles. Doesn't mean the waves aren't going to come. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be treacherous. But you have at least your little oars. You can paddle like hell. And that's like, you know, having some tools to navigate it. Not like...
I'm going to pretend these waves don't exist. Yes. They should not be hitting my dinghy.
And the water fills my lungs and that is the end.
And I also, you know, I think there's so many crossovers there with kind of like the American dream, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, be happy at all costs. And if you're not happy, there's something wrong with you, which is such a trap to be like, good people are happy. Mm. Proper people are happy. Healthy people are happy, 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 happy. And if you're not, if you're, you know, if you are feeling pain and if you are suffering in some way, you know, there's quick ways out of it. You just haven't done the right things to get out of it, right? And like, no, we don't get to just say no thank you to pain. And if somebody's telling you that you can, they are lying to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's interesting that we also sometimes have a tendency to put people up on a pedestal.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, you know, like they, no, like, you know, they have such a perfect life, mm-hmm. and you have no idea what that person is going through. Yeah. And this is where, you know, I'd like to take a moment to kind of bring up social media and how much pressure I think that that's putting on mm-hmm. people to live up to some kind of impossible standard. But also, you know, you've got like the comparisons it creates and, you know, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on that. Basically just that, I mean, I don't really post to social media anymore because I have come into conflict with my own ethics around it. From a mental health perspective, knowing that actually, you know, if I post what looks like me having a great time and my life is fine and everything's good and magical, that can actually hurt somebody because mm-hmm. they're going to take it at face value, and we don't have enough of a relationship for that person to know I'm not doing great. You know what? I'm not. I'm just getting by and I'm doing the best I can and I'm happy with my life, and that's, you know, that's the extent of it. So there's been an ethical dilemma for me anyways. What am I advertising about my life? And is it false advertising? Mm. Do people have enough critical thinking about me and my life, enough insight into my life to know that, no, it doesn't always look like this?
And that's where, when we've gone into this like isolation and this alienation over the past, you know, year and a half of like restrictions and lockdowns and all that kind of stuff, is this tendency towards like, oh, well, look at their life over there, mm-hmm. and feeling alone in your suffering. And so maybe that's why then people are like, oh, well, if I could be special and different over here, then I can feel like I'm as good as them and, you know, or, you know, worthy. And, you know, actually, I was just mentioning this yesterday to somebody. I find social media quite triggering. For the reason that, you know, I spent most of my life being, well, you know, I think I learned in my early teenage years that to be the center of attention, to be sexy, to be wanted, like that was my validation. And I worked in many different industries that continued, you know, where you're always getting that validation from, you know, your environment or from like basically outside of you. And it was such a wake-up call for me when I had my accident, where it's like, oh, wait a minute, take away that money, take away your health, take away all the people and the job and the status and the identity that you have, and what do you have left? So then to start self-validating and discovering what that meant for me. And so when I go on social media, sometimes there's this like, you know, I try really hard to share what I know or what I'm learning and not pretend like I have it all figured out, but to stay away from the like, va va voom, look at me, I'm so sexy over here. Not just, it's not necessarily like who I want to be anymore anyways, but then you see like butts and bodies and like how many people are using filters, and I mean fillers and all kinds of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there's this part in your brain, especially as a woman, yes, that compares yourself to what you're seeing. And you're like, God, and so I find it very triggering where I'm like, oh, am I not the sexy woman anymore? Oh. Okay, but do you even want to be the sexy woman anymore? Is that being the sexy woman? Because maybe being the sexy woman is just for me in front of my bathroom mirror or me and my partner. Like, mm-hmm. does the world need to see me as the sexy woman in order for me to be a powerful, yeah. sexy woman? So,
yeah, I don't know about you, but like 5 minutes on social media, I feel ancient. I look in the mirror and I'm like, what is happening to my face? This is, must be premature aging. I must be some kind of freak of nature because it seems like nobody else out there has a wrinkle. I'm 32. I must be falling apart. I must be like, you know, like, and it's catastrophic thinking. It's weird. I don't like it. I'm monitoring it mm-hmm. as I'm thinking it, being like, what is going on? Like, I don't want to think about this. I don't want to be preoccupied with wrinkles. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. But when you see a world swimming in wrinkleless, fabulous women, you start to feel like an actual fucking monster because you know, like,
I hear you.
Yeah, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had Botox. I've never had a filler. And apparently that's something that's really common now.
Yeah.
And so I just see like this, like, you know, right eyelid sagging a little more yes. day over day. I mean, I do lymphatic face massages recently and face yep. yoga, which does just make me feel better. But I don't know. It is weird. We are living in a world of like, it's almost like we're kind of not even like so many of us. And I think our culture is kind of perpetuating this sense of like false reality.
Oh, totally. Yeah. In this reality, women don't age. We dip them in formaldehyde every night so that they can be perfect and shining the next morning. Like, it's so, it's, yeah, it's freaky dicky.
And this is like, I mean, obviously this is where we're getting into a conversation that we weren't planning for, but I'm enjoying it. Mm-hmm. Because I do think that it is also important and also valid to what we're already talking about. But like, mm-hmm. and what happens when you put so much value mm-hmm. on your beauty, mm-hmm. on your looks, on external mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. that you perhaps don't develop in other yeah. very important aspects of yourself yeah. and yeah. your personal evolution.
Yeah.
And then aging comes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so curious about how that's going to impact and like what that's going to look like in 10, 15, 20 mm-hmm. years from now,
mm-hmm.
like the crisis that is going to create
yeah.
for so many people.
Yeah. Yeah. Because again, there's products out there, there's gurus out there, there's health, whatever spokespeople out there that will tell you if you're aging, you're essentially doing something wrong.
Hmm.
You know, you should not be getting gray hairs and wrinkles and sagging. It's because, you know, you haven't done something the right way.
Hmm.
Not just, you know, your body's oxidizing because you've been on earth for a while, right? It's like you yourself have failed in some way, but don't worry. You can turn this boat around if you just buy X, Y, and Z and listen to me.
Right.
Right.
And that's the other aspect of it. There's so much money that goes into keeping us on that hamster wheel, mm-hmm. chasing mm-hmm. and chasing. And like you're, yeah. I know. And this is where then we can kind of bring it back to spirituality.
Yep,
it's like, well, taking care of your health, eating mm-hmm, the right things,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Obviously reducing inflammation, mm-hmm. exercising. Those are great for you. Meditation, good. Great for reducing stress. These are all great things.
Yep.
But there's a certain amount of like you can't escape reality.
Right.
The reality, sorry, of aging and death.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to – and also too – you know, why can't we also find aging gracefully beautiful?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, and this is where I, as a woman, have felt so much pressure mm-hmm. on having to be beautiful.
Yeah.
Having to present myself in a certain way.
Yeah.
And I think from all the years of being kind of objectified as well as thinking that's what I needed to do, totally. Objectify myself, I have really steered away from all of that, and I try to I don't know, take things to like a deeper level. Mm-hmm. We're working through so many things in this conversation, Clay.
Yeah, but I know, exactly, I see that connection there where, you know, people make a lot of money out of making us deny reality. The reality is we're going to age, we're going to die. Come on, people, now. We're going to do that. And if they can flip it around and make it our fault, it's your fault you're aging like that. You're hideous. You've done something wrong. You haven't had the right diet, the right lifestyle, the right stress reduction, the right gadgets, the right meditation, the right mantra. Then you can keep people in a fucking tailspin of what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? And that's when they're vulnerable, right? I'm doing something wrong. I'm doing something wrong. Not just you're doing something right and the sun is aging you, because that's what happens.
Yeah. And having some grounded and practical tools, yeah. Like, you know, I pray, I meditate. But I also exercise, I lift weights, I do yoga, mm-hmm. I try my best to eat healthy. I freaking love pizza. It's actually a problem. If there was AA for pizza, I would probably have to go. Actually, I'd love to go. That'd be so cool. I wonder if there'd be pizza there. Just kidding. But, you know, like at the same time, like over probably, I mean, your 20s, you're struggling and trying to figure things out. And, trying to, you know, contend with who you are and where you're going and the pressures of life, your parents, society. But I found that the thing that helped me the most was knowing that no matter what life throws my way, I will be okay, and having tools like, wow, my brain won't stop today. I can go for a really vigorous workout or walk. I can dump all of my thoughts onto a piece of paper. It's like having the tools to navigate rather than I don't want to feel any of this.
Right Exactly. And I think that's what you're saying with the rubber dinghy that we're all kind of in. Grab yourself some oars. It's really going to help you, probably going to help you more than just saying these waves don't exist and they shouldn't be hitting my boat. Right.
But I can pay somebody else to let me in their boat and then I'll be okay. Right. Which actually I wanted to, you know, say, like, I do believe sometimes we almost need that guidance or someone to show us the way to finding our own way. Mm-hmm. But where we start kind of getting into a little bit of like that tricky, slippery territory is if you become reliant and dependent on somebody else, or codependent in a sense, on, well, I can just pay you, you'll attune my chakras, I will be okay. And like, I mean, I obviously I you know, I do Reiki for people, but I also at the same time feel like that is a relaxing healing modality, but it's not the cure all fix all. If as soon as you leave here you have a bunch of like destructive, unhealthy, you know, habits and other things going on under the surface. And what happens when something really difficult in your life happens? Then what?
Exactly. And what I think about, the for me personally, like the role of the healer, the helper, whatever. So for me, in doula work, in mental health crisis work, in counseling work, my mental model of what I'm supposed to be doing there is I am there in solidarity. I'm here because I am in your corner. I'm rooting for you really hard. That's what I'm doing here. I'm walking this path with you. Not all of it, because I can't be there for all of the path, but I can walk alongside you for this hour, you know, and that's powerful. But my job isn't taking you off the path and taking you to my path. My job is to be in solidarity with what are you working on in yourself right now? What are you struggling with? Do you want to talk about that? Do you want to work through it? And giving choice and directing them, like you said, back to themselves so that they have a better sense of self-knowledge and a better idea of what that discernment feels like for them, of what do I really want? What's wise for me in this moment? What's the right choice for me? If I'm trying to yank them over to my side, then I'm not doing it right. Right?
Yeah, and like, not everything works for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't apply, and this is kind of coming back to like the blueprint of like follow my magic formula.
Yep.
And you will be on the beach with your laptop in no time. Freedom 25.
Yep.
And I really feel that you can't just come into this life and expect to follow someone else's blueprint. It's about finding your own, which is why I try to remind people, like, whatever whatever you see in me, that also, like, that you would admire or think is wonderful, that exists inside of you. It's almost like you're seeing the potential of what could be inside of you, which I think is a really great thing. But where it can get weird is when you're like, it's this unattainable pedestal that is created in the process.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And people abuse that pedestal.
Man, I find it so uncomfortable when people are like, oh, your life is so perfect. I don't get that often. I've had it a few times and I'm like, okay, let me give you a laundry list of all the shit that's happening in my life. I mean, I meditate so that I can balance out, you know, so that I can experience more peace, not to remove all of my human suffering. It just gives me a little bit of a, I don't know, gives me a little bit of grounding on my capacity to navigate those challenges that come my way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that, you know, that also comes back down to, like who can blame people that they want to think in these kind of extreme black and white ways, because it's comforting to think that somebody out there actually does have the answers. Ugh, isn't that a nice thought?
That's like having a daddy.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, you know, it's like having a father figure who is like, let me guide you. I have all the answers. You don't need to think for yourself, which is really disempowering, because that's the hero complex, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need the answers. I have them for you.
Yeah, exactly. And isn't that comforting? And who can be blamed for finding that comforting?
I just want to be wrapped up in a cozy blanket and be told everything's okay.
Everything's okay. This person has all the answers and their life is perfect, which means that a perfect life is attainable. We can keep that hope alive as long as we keep on projecting this ridiculous fantasy on other people.
So how do we keep wonder and curiosity alive in one sense? Because I am a very mystical thinking person in some ways. It's part of the reason why I love India. It's part of the reason why I have explored esoteric sort of spiritual studies. Not because I read something, I'm like, fact. I've checked it. It's a fact. But just because I find it so interesting, you know, that Eastern mysticism, I find really incredibly just like fascinating. But how do you keep that magic alive, but then not lose your sense of reality and kind of cross over into this territory that we're talking about, which is harmful and hard to then come back from.
Right. And I think that comes to kind of what I said, like, you know, do we have to make a choice between magic and reality? Because isn't reality kind of magic? I had this like beautiful, beautiful moment the other night when I've been having so many struggles, just my mind is going and going and going because, side note, have been going through a lot of things lately and kind of like life turmoil, and magically was driving on the highway, turned the radio off, and I just listened to the sound of my car and watched the dawn and watched the like the lights flicker on and watched the color of the trees change, and suddenly things felt magic again. I was out of my head, out of awful stories, out of awful circling blame and arguments, and suddenly the world I was living in, I was just driving on the highway on Burnaby, was magic again because I was paying attention. Even the sound of my car, just the fact that it was, you know, just kind of powerful and present and rhythmic and just interesting to listen to. It's like, this is what wonder is. This is just paying attention to what is right now. Right now is magical.
Being mindful in the moment and
yeah
well, I know I was kind of thinking about that the other day too. One of my Well, I mean, she's like my oldest friend. Mm. She's not my oldest friend. She's my longest time friend. I don't know why people always say that. But I've known her since we were in diapers, and she like 3 days ago had a baby, and I'm like, that is so weird to think about that you, I've known you since you were in diapers, right. And then you and this dude, your husband,
yep,
have created this little creature right there. That's such a trippy thought.
Oh my God.
Where did she come from?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know, like that. So there is some magic to life, but, it's like,
so I wonder, like, you know, I guess that brings back the question. Do we have to add a story on top of it?
Right.
Do we have to throw on all kinds of sort of far-fetched stories on top of how magical life already is?
Mm. Yeah, instead of just being present in the moment, being like, wow, how magical is it that that tree just keeps growing and getting bigger every year over year? Mm-hmm. Or how when the sunlight hits those leaves, it just like twinkles and I feel all warm and fuzzy inside. And, you know, can't we just appreciate that?
Yeah. And I mean, again, that's not going to be a cure-all. And I don't think mindfulness is a cure-all for all things and all human suffering. But, you know, being tuned into reality, I think also does mean, you know, having to bring in some wonder there too, because it's ever-changing and often beautiful and horrible at the same time, sure. Mm-hmm. But the story, it's like, is the story on top of it necessary? Is a story about, you know, aliens, lizard people.
I love those stories, by the way. They are so fun.
Yeah,
the reptilian creatures,
right?
But
are they necessary to live a good life? We don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing, I love, like, there's this podcast called Mysterious Universe. Like, it was that one and Joe Rogan were the first two podcasts I ever listened to, like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something now. And Mysterious Universe is all about all those stories. And, like, they make fun of, like, blatantly made-up stories. And then they sometimes examine, like, similarities from stories across different places. And they, you know, where it's kind of fascinating that you can have a story from completely opposite sides of the world that have so many different similarities. And I love listening to stuff like that. X-Files, some episode. Man, so many episodes. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. But like, I really enjoy that kind of stuff. But at the same time, like you said, is that necessary or the end all be all and the story behind everything in order for it to be magical? Like, why do we need to believe that we're from another planet? We could totally be a hybrid crossbreed. I would not say that we aren't, but does that help me right here in this moment to deal with the fact that maybe a family member is dying of cancer, or you find out another one is a pedophile,
right?
You know, and you feel those deep sense of, like, you know, betrayal and grief and loss. Well, then maybe these mystical ideas are probably not overly helpful in this moment.
Yeah. And I think, again, that sense of all the answers are out there if I simply just keep searching, and how that can, you know, I don't remember what the term was again, but this can be like an obsessive compulsive problem, right? There can be an OCD around knowing the answers and having the implicit logic that I will not be able to enjoy my life or proceed in this life until I know the answers. And how preoccupying and obsessive that can get, so that somebody can, like, jump from answer to answer to answer, none of those answers being terribly grounded in reality, endlessly frustrating, very, very energy intensive, and also, you know, literally preventing yourself from enjoying life, living life meaningfully, because you need to find the meaning to it all. And I saw some of that in myself, right? When I read that, I was like, oh, that used to be me. Totally used to be me. Like, I would pretend to be like this normal person, enjoying parties, having normal conversations. And really all my brain was doing, like, who can I wrap into a conversation about the meaning of it all? Right? That's where my head was at for years and years and years. It was this deeply disquieting, disturbing sense that I need to know the answers. And also how arrogant, right, to think that I would ever find the answers. Like, who am I Clay, to find all the answers, to be on that mission to find all the answers. Like, why would they come to me and not anyone else?
But the real question is, how much wood can a woodchuck wood?
Right? And we will never know. And we have to be okay with that, Shanti. We have to be able to live in that uncertainty.
Surrender. Let it go. Let it go. Yeah, true. No one to surrender. So, I mean, let's then, for people that have made it this far through the episode, thank you for listening. because at the same time that we're having this conversation, we are also working out some of our own thoughts around some of this stuff and doing it in obviously a vulnerable way to share with all of you guys. But like some takeaways here. What would be some good takeaways for people from your, you know, perspective?
Right. I think, and we didn't get to into this one, but, you know, if a charismatic leader in your life is doing all the things an abuser would do, isolating you from everything you know, all of your other supports, you leave interactions with that charismatic leader with a profound sense of befuddlement, but also elation, but also fear. These are all massive, massive red flags. If that person is absolutely allergic to facts and accountability, whoa. Okay, if you wouldn't be comfortable with that in a romantic partner, why on earth would your charismatic leader be able to get away with that? And that's okay. Red flag, huge red flag. You know, I think there are so many crossovers between that endless sense of befuddlement that sinks in and starts to become accepted as reality, that kind of radical relativism of, oh, well, I guess we don't know anything. Guess we can't trust anything. Guess we have to just, you know, go with whatever. Whoever's more charismatic, we'll just listen to them. I like this person, so I'll listen to their opinion because it's all up in the air now. I think there's that. I think that worries me the most. That sense of there are no good sources of information or more reasonable ones. It's all relative, so you may as well just listen to somebody who talks the fastest and seems to agree with me about things or seem to approve of me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and something else you said there, and I should have, like, I was just so, like, listening to what you were saying. And then I totally had a brain fart here. Just because we've had, like, such a, like, pre-conversation and now this conversation. But, yeah, I think it's just, oh, yes, that's what it was, compassion. I do believe that being a compassionate person, and not labeling somebody a villain in your story once you discover, oh, okay, there's some really not so healthy behavior over here that might not be so good for me to have in my life. But again, it's this extreme of they're a bad person or they're a good person. But I think that also too, our culture, like we were always like, oh, there's the hero and there's the villain because that's what sells in movies and books and stories. But I think that for us to have compassion towards someone, like, let's say an ex. Everyone has an ex. Well, I'm sure you do. Everyone has somebody from their past where you're like, ooh, you really done me wrong. But instead of to look at that person and be like, they are a bad person, I think it's healthier for you to be like, okay, that person is complex, like we all are. And they were hurtful and harmful to me. And whether or not they are still a toxic person or a potentially toxic person, does this mean I have to walk up to them, forgive them, let them back into my life? Do I need to allow someone because I know what they've been through to continue being in my life and hurting me and, you know, causing a lot of suffering for me? Can I be compassionate while still having boundaries?
And we make it about them, right? I'm going to try to pass judgment on you and that will inform my decisions about what to do with you. Well, why don't you just not? Why don't you just make decisions about you? This person has been harmful in the past. What am I going to do about it? I don't want to be harmed anymore. Okay, then I will remove their access to me. You know, we don't have to necessarily decide what is this person. Are they an evil person? Are they a broken person? Are they a... It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They've harmed you and you don't want to be harmed anymore. Okay, that it's your prerogative to walk away or to distance or to, you know, or to set down some boundaries that you're allowed to stick to, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think we have this idea that we need to decide, well, what kind of abuse is this? Am I valid in thinking this? What kind of person is this? We might not ever know. We might be in that internal debate forever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did that ex mean to do that awful thing? Is that person a sociopath? No, not a sociopath. Traumatized. Yeah, no, traumatized. It doesn't fucking matter. Mm-hmm. I would propose that it doesn't matter.
So let's avoid making up stories.
Yeah, yeah.
Boundaries.
Boundaries are good.
Set boundaries with people. Mm-hmm. And also use a critical mind before accepting somebody as a helper, guide, guru, teacher, whatever, because, you know, when you're opening up your subconscious mind, which is being vulnerable and being like, here you go, you better make sure that you've done some checks and balances to make sure that that person is sane, stable, well-meaning, and all of the above to be able to then give you that guidance that you're looking for.
Exactly. And likewise, you know, if an abusive partner always wants you to think that there's something wrong with you, wow, what a powerful position for that partner to be in, right? Your fault. You did this wrong. You need to improve as a person like this, this, and this. That is a power move extraordinaire. Same thing with self-improvement, spirituality, wellness. If somebody's constantly telling you that you're doing things wrong, that you are flawed, that you need improving, that you're incomplete, but they can help you with that. Whoa, watch out. Right.
Yeah. Well, this has been a good conversation. I feel like we've covered a lot of ground.
We always do.
Anything else you want to add to that?
No, this was great. This was a journey.
Mm-hmm. Feels that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, where can people find you?
People can find me. I mean, like I said, I don't really use social media that much, but I might. I might again.
Okay.
Clinic of Work, Instagram, Twitter. I've got a website, clinicoforic.com.
So I'll put all the links in there.
Yep.
Show notes.
Yep.
Cool. All right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time. Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, feel free to share it, like it, subscribe to it, review it. Whatever you want to do to help support the show is greatly appreciated. Until next time. Bye.